what I'm going to talk about today is something a bit more related. What are we going to do if a DLHC external interaction show up? Well, one thing you could do is to wait for lattice computation. As you know, they are not going to be right for DLHC. And another thing I'm going to tell you is that you could use hologram. So during this talk, I'm going to explain many papers, in particular works on holographic QCD and our recent work in holographic technical. So the summary of my talk is very simple. What I'm going to tell you is that we know that holography works for QCD very well. And what we are going to do is to apply it to the Lotovic symmetry breaking sector. So let's start by the case of holographic QCD. What about QCD? Well, we know many things about QCD, but in particular we know that at high energies, it has to look scale invariant, except with some non-perturbative effects like the quark condensate, gluon condensate that break this scale invariance. We also know that in the OP expansion, this scale invariance comes as a logarithm with the number of colors, and the gluon and quark condensates, for example, appears as 1 over Q4 or Q6 deviations from conformality. Another thing we know is that global symmetries of QCD with massless fermions are the ones of SUNF left, SUNF right, and we know that the quark condensates breaks this chiral symmetry down to the vector subgroup. So with just this information, we are going to build a five-dimensional model, and we are going to extract observables and compare with experiments. So let's start with the simplest thing you could think about. So if I want to implement scale invariance in my model, the only thing I had to do is to put ABS. Why? Because in ABS, the metric looks like this. So you see this is a four-dimensional variety, and this is the fifth dimension. And every time that I just move the along the fifth dimension, I can interpret this movement as just a rescaling of the four-dimensional momentum. So the fact that we have conformal invariance in ABS immediately signals that there is a scale invariance in the four-dimensional point of view. So for you, the idea is that every time I talk about moving along the fifth dimension, in fact, what I'm talking about is running with the momentum in four dimensions. So one thing that you should worry about is that I'm talking about the scale invariance in QCD. This is something at high energies. And what I thought, probably most of you know about the ABS CFT dictionary, and generally what it tells you is that when I'm talking about a weakly coupled description in 4D, I am already in the strong limit in 5D. So in other words, it means that since QCD at high energies is weak, I should then expect to have any five-dimensional weakly interacting description of 4D. So before just not doing anything of holographic QCD, because this was the main thing stopping people from looking at five-dimensional models as a description of QCD. Just look at the following thing. What we do in holographic QCD is to look at currents and interpret them as mesons. So you look at the action of these mesons in a five-dimensional model, it just looks like, at the true level, like the Young-Mills field. What it means is that the action in 5D is going to be non-valid when we lose control over all these higher-order operators that are modifying our action. And apart from these operators, I also have 1 over n terms that I'm not considering here. That's fine because we are still in the large n limit. But what about all these operators? That's what it means in the dictionary, that weak in 4D means strong in 5D. Because in reality, at scales where these operators are important, I cannot do anything about this model. And the scale of these operators should be very low, because we know that a five-dimensional description of mesons generally predicts a behavior of masses that is not the one predicted by string theory or by models of strings for QCD, these radio trajectories. So I know that these scales should be quite low. So what I'm gonna do? Well, if you just look at what the ADS-CFT is telling you, is that all the computations in the ADS-CFT are on-shell, meaning that I had to substitute the equations of motion for the fields. So you do that, surprisingly, as quadratic order, it just gives you precisely what I had at the beginning, this giant mill action, with some correction in front, and some boundary term that also looks like the giant mills. So in other words, yes, I expect that there will be higher order operators that will modify my action, but at the quadratic level, they are going to look just what I put before, this giant mill action, with some different metric. Okay? And of course, cubic terms do receive corrections. So I expect them not to give me a good description for QCD. Let me just continue with the modeling. So I also want to be able to describe a core condensate. I know that this core condensate breaks conformal invariance in this way. It's like Q to the 6. And with this rule of thumb that I told you, Q to the 6 is going to behave as Z to the 6. So I know the core condensate has to be some bulk field that behaves as Z to the 6. Okay.
I'm sorry, could you go back? I didn't quite catch that reason back there. Hold on. So the Q to the 6 turns into the Z to the 6.
Yeah.
So how do you get the bottom line? I guess I just
so
stooped it here clearly, but
no, it's just that you have this two point function, and you know it's going to be just the log. When I have ADS, and I need something that goes like Q to the 6, if I want to describe the quark condensate. So the guy in front has to be somebody that goes like C to the 6 to give me this behavior. You're going to see this later, I think.
I'm just saying, repeating what she said about the analogous term will scale like C to the 6. And
I mean, it's just
The condensate doesn't scale like Z to the 6. The term that represents it scales like Z to the 6.
I thought she was saying condensate. Okay.
So, okay. Regarding the scalar symmetries, there is another entry, let's say, in the ADS-CFT dictionary that tells you that once you have a global symmetry in the 4D sense, the realization in 5D is a gauge symmetry, the gauge version of this global symmetry. So the only thing I had to do is for this chiral symmetry add the corresponding gauge symmetry. And this, just keep in mind that although I say left-right, since I know chiral symmetry is broken down to the vectors and group, it's more convenient to talk about vector and axial combinations of these left-right fields. Just keep this notation in mind. And as I said, chiral symmetry breaking is represented by this bulk scalar that couples to the axial and breaks the left-right symmetry to just the vector subgroup. So the realization will be that this axial couples to this field that we know scales at CQ. Okay, so just summarizing. To describe QCD, naively, what we need is a five-dimensional model that has to be in ADS with some bulk field, left-right, that couples to the axial. And the only thing we had to determine about this is the profile of this bulk field. That's the only important piece. So in terms of parameters, what you need is these two boundary conditions for the field, the behavior near the ultraviolet, near for small z, and the behavior near the infrared for big Z, and the size of the extra dimension. These quantities are going to be fixed by, for example, the F pi, the mass of the quarks, and the QQ bar condensate. Well, and the result is just this. I don't know. Oh, it's difficult to see. Sorry, I changed it. Okay, so the agreement. Thank you.
That helps.
The agreement of this table, of these hadronic observables, is to the 10%. And I want to remind you that I just did the stupidest five-dimensional model I could think about. And you see, most of the things, like fits very well except this thing here. And the reason is that this g rho pi pi is a three-point function. And I told you, I can trust my computations to the quadratic level, but this is a cubic function, and I shouldn't trust it. So it's more like lucky that it's even nearby. So the corrections are not so big as expected.
So once again, what were your inputs? I lost track.
Yeah, so my inputs are what I said before. It's just these three quantities. This I needed two boundary conditions and the...
Yes.
So, in fact, this thing here is more done with I need to fix two things, and then I do the best fit for this harmonic oscillator. So the agreement with including this 3-point function is the 2 to the 10%, whereas the large n correction, since n is equal to 3, you will expect that it will be 30%. And if you take off this 3-point function, that you know the 5-dimensional description is not going to be good, then it goes down to an agreement to the 4%. So all this, taking into account that QCD is not supersymmetric, so it has nothing to do with what you'd expect in the ADS-CFT, and it's not even very large NC. What it seems to be, it's quite conformal, because if you just substitute this quark condensate profile, this AB things, but just a simple Neumann Dirichlet boundary condition, so an infinite dimension condensate in this form, the agreement is still very good, it's to the 15%. So, in conclusion, from the last 2 years, what we learned is that you can use a 5-dimensional model to describe qualitatively QCD, and it works pretty well. Even more than you expect. Okay? Any question? I'm going very fast, or just don't.
So, yeah. Well, let me just sort of pause for a moment. Is there some, I mean, I understand what you said, but is there some reason why it should, I guess the reason it's 5-dimension is just because of this ADS-CFT correspondence principle, you know, rather than 6 doesn't work so well. So has anybody explored other dimensions? Or you only have the ADS-CFT correspondence in this 5 dimensions, I guess, and that's why you use it.
So let me tell you something. If you are just looking at low energy quantities, like the low energy constants, either capital or angular, you don't need anything but a 5 or 6-dimensional, an extra dimensional model. You put this, and then you get automatically vector meson dominance, and the high energy softness that you need for the amplitude. So that comes automatically because you are putting this model in an extra dimensional model, wherever they can. So this is natural. What is more surprising is this level of agreement. And this you can obtain only with NDS. So, of course, we don't understand why, because it's not supersymmetric, it's not latency. I cannot like work in both sides of the correspondence and understand what's going on. What I see is that qualitatively it works very well, but it has to be ADS too. So the higher the energy you want to go, the more ADS it has to be.
So there's no deeper understanding. It's just right now it just seems to be sort of an accident. That's what I'm trying to
get at.
Or is it the conformal, or is it only the ADS CFT that properly captures the conformal?
So there is no ADS CFT for this. There is no correspondence because we cannot explore both sides. But there is no curve check for the QCD side. We cannot solve QCD with this. What we know is that low energy constants are going to be fine because it's an extra dimension, and we understand pretty well that. We understand that if you want to match high energy constraints, the fact that this ADS is helpful only for the logarithm, and that's pretty much it. We don't know more about this. So,
can you fit the higher spin field with same parameters?
Yeah. So, for example, there was a work by Schwartz and Katz and others about using, for example, gravitons to explain spin too. And the spectrum, the quadratic quantities, looks very well. Really
with the same parameters or different parameters?
Well, yeah, they had to use this X field, and L1 and just assume that they have gravitons.
They need extra
yes.
Input parameters.
Yeah, no, yeah. They don't need the.
If you fix the geometry, you should be a little bit.
Exactly. So, what they do for spin 2 is to add an extra dimension with exactly the same parameters and assume that there are gravitons. They look at the gravitons and the spectrum and they find a good agreement. So, I don't think they introduce any new parameters.
So, using this, you can't check baryon masses, can you?
Yeah, but then it has not been done yet. So.
How do you check baryon masses? Because in large NC, a baryon consists of.
You need an F and an F description, yes. So they, I know there is people doing it, but in principle, you can check and see if it's wrong or not.
Okay.
It seems to be the ADS. Yes. When I'm saying ADS CFT, I'm not saying the original formulation of ADS CFT, some modification of it. So it has to be worked out for this. So, okay. So the next point is to apply it to the electroweak symmetry breaking sector. And that we call holographic technicolor for obvious reason. So let's start again. I need a five-dimensional model in ADS because it seems to work pretty well, and I understand the correspondence better in this setup. And I remind you that the metric in this case is given by just 1/Z. So the next thing I need is to add left-right symmetry in the back. You remember in QCD we have this left-right symmetry because of chiral symmetry in QCD. In the electroweak sector, it's a bit different. It comes from the fact that there should be a custodial symmetry protecting the electroweak symmetry breaking sector. Or in other words, you need to suppress contributions to the T parameter. And the best way to do that is to add this left-right pulse symmetry. So, four-dimensional custodial symmetry is implemented in the 5D picture as just a bulk gauge left-right symmetry. And this is, to this stage, this is exactly as the Higgs models. The only thing you had to add, as in QCD, is some bulk fields, this X that I was talking about. In general, what will happen is that these bulk fields coupled to the fields in the bulk, the axial and vector, so they will modify the metric in front as, instead of being just ADS, they will induce this kind of modifications. And in general, we lead to metrics for the effective metrics for the vector and the axial that are different. Just because these fields don't have to couple to the axial and the vector in the same way. And we know they don't because chiral symmetry or the corresponding left-right symmetry is broken in the back. Okay. So up to the stage, you can say, okay, does it mean that I can do whatever and get whatever because I can write down this crazy model in 5D, add whatever bulk fields I want, and then get what I want? Well, apparently I could do that. But in practice, I cannot. And I'm going to explain you why. So, what are the rules for five-dimensional models? The first one is that the valid approximation has to be large. Why? Because we need at least a description, at least for me, weak coupling in five dimensions, and also this take off the possibility of localizing kinetic terms and using them to, you know, to cancel things against each other. So the first rule is that I want to work in the large end approximation because otherwise I have absolutely no control over the thing. The second rule.
Could you come back to that kinetic thing again?
Yeah. So what happens is
so
that.
Just say what you mean by that sentence again. No localized.
What happens is that, you remember, I can always write down some localized term, d4 of x, f squared, for example, and add a whatever thing here. If you do NDA, what happens is that this is 1/n. So in principle, these terms are completely negligible. But if you are working in intermediate n or low n, then you can try to, you know, to cancel things against each other, playing with these localized kinetic terms. So I don't want to use that because I want to work in the large chain. So, the other important point is NDA for condenses. The only thing is telling you that I'm working in a five-dimensional model. And I know what are the cutoffs, relative cutoffs in each slice of ADS. So, for sure, what I don't want is to give a web to any field that is bigger than my cutoff. Because I'm, like in this case, if imagine if it was Planck scale, I would be out of the reach of defective theory. So this is very lucky that you have NDA in 5D, because this is telling you that let's call XD to each of these background fields that go like Z to the D. Imagine that you have a bunch of them, like a lot, and then you add each contribution of this Z to the D. In the infected metric that is felt by axial and vector, the format it acquires is the following. It's 1 plus this contribution here. Well, let's look at this contribution. If you see, there are two things. First, this is suppressed everywhere but in the infrared. Second, is that the coefficient in front, this maximum is going to be 1. But even the coefficient in front, it goes like 1 over d squared for large d. What does it mean that? I start adding z to the fourth, my first condensate. It gives me some profile here, some contribution. I keep adding and adding and adding condensates, and they are more and more irrelevant. Meaning that for phenomenological purposes, I can add as many condensates as I want, but the ones that are going to give me any result are just the lowest order condensates. Okay?
But so how do you normal? I mean, there's a normal. You said that O2. Oh, I see.
I can go back if you want. So
that's under the assumption that the O is of order 1.
And this comes. I had to get used to this. This comes from the fact that I cannot give a web to this guy that is much bigger. So the coefficient in front is this O that I call. It has to be order 1. I cannot do it 10,000 or any weird quantity. Right.
And that L1 there is once again what?
This is the infrared.
Oh, that's the location of the brain.
Yes.
I
so
see.
This is L0, the ultraviolet brain.
Mm-hmm.
This is, sorry, I didn't go through this. L1, the infrared brain. So L0 is a small quantity, L1 is a big quantity that corresponds to low energies and high energies. Okay, so summarizing. My rules of the game are that I want a large N theory because I want to work in the weak coupling regime, and that add as many condensates as you want. If you follow NDA, the only phenomenologically relevant ones are going to be these two, one for the vector, one for the axial. So at the end, my model is not going to be so far from QCD. And
so
here.
Can you explain to me real quick? Why do you have L0 and L1? I'm used to the Randall tunnel scenario in which you only have one distance, and it's a separation between the brains. How do I have two distances?
So there are two versions of the Randall tunnel. Generally, what you take is ABS. ABS is conformal invariant. There is no scale there. There are nothing. What you can do is cut part of ABS near the ultraviolet, and then I call this L0. And I put a brain here, and I call it ultraviolet brain. And it's going to be like a Planck.
There's slices within.
Exactly. And the Randall Sundum 1 version was infinite. But you want to break this conformal invariance because you want all these bound states. And so for phenomenological relevant, you need to add another brain. This is called the inference brain, and I call it L1. So in the original Randall Sundum, this was Planck, and this was TEV. So that's what you need to know that. So one technical point here that it's just for funny reasons is that I told you that something that goes to z to some power appears in the OPE function at high energies like 1 over q to the same power. So all these condensates that I'm adding are going to appear in the OPE like q to the 2d. So I told you what are the rules for NDA in these fields. You apply these rules here. I told you that in the metric, they appear like 1 over t squared, z to the 2d, and this corresponds to 1 over q to the 2d, with this coefficient in front. What is funny is that this divergent coefficient, meaning that for higher and higher condensates at high energies, I have a coefficient that diverges with d, is precisely what is expected from QCD. So it's just funny that NDA in 5D is giving you something that was just expected from QCD, right, from theoretical grounds. But this is just an aside. So we know the rules, and the only thing we have to do is look at the phenomenology. So, of course, like, if you do phenomenology, you are telling me, I do a five-dimensional model dual to Technicolor, so for sure it's going to have a problem with the S parameter, because this is the main, or the first problem that they were finding. So what is the S parameter? It's something that contains a three-level contribution that affects the two-point function of gauge bosons, contains a three-level contribution and some, let's say, loop contribution. And if you look, it has been measured by two-bit position measurements, and if you look at the PDG, the value is negative plus minus 0.1. Okay. This term here is generally of order 0.1, 0.2, and positive. Keep this in mind. So in order for this S parameter to be near the phenomenological value, better for the three level to be negative or near zero, because it has to compensate with this and lead to something that is order zero. Well, what is the typical value for S in Technicolor? The problem is that in Technicolor, you couldn't compute the S parameter. The only thing you could do is, assuming that Technicolor looks like QCD, I take the QCD value and I rescale with the number of colors. So the typical value for S in Technicolor is the number of colors divided by some power, positive, and order 0.1. And of course, if you go to higher values often, then I'm more and more against phenomenological constraints. So what's the value in pure ADS? If you compute this in just ADS with no condensation or anything around, the value is, not surprisingly, positive and exactly what you expect. So here what I'm saying is that I don't know if Technicolor can be described from the point of view of a five-dimensional model. What it seems to be is that consistently, these five-dimensional models are able to describe QCD and also are able to have the same problems as Technicolor have. So at least it's an indication that we are going through the same problems as Technicolor. Okay. Just let me tell you that in QCD, what we did, when I tell you N, in fact, what I'm telling you is that large N is weak coupling in the five-dimensional sense. It's just some matching that you have to do. Okay. So, and this value, as I told you, is big and is positive. So this is quite problematic. So ways to solve this problem in Technicolor would be, first, I can do low end, so at least this three-level contribution is not so big. I can imagine that this is going to be fine. So S decreases, and as I explained before, if it's low end, I can maybe play with localized kinetic terms, and maybe I can cancel this out. But this is bad because, first, low end, we know it goes to a strong coupling regime. We don't want that. And in general, if we add these localized kinetic terms, you always end up with tachyonic states, which invalidates your description as a field theory. And also, from the point of view of having a dual for this Technicolor models, if you are in the low end limit, it doesn't look like very appealing. Another way, it will be to cancel contributions of the gauge sector against the fermion sector. And the way to do that is to use flat fermions. In this case, what you are doing is linking the flavor issues with the S parameter. And the way I'm going to tell you is look for a QCD-like answer. What's the value, for example, of S in holographic QCD? If you look here, what I'm varying is this axial condensate, this X field that was coupled to the axial, the value of this condensate here, against the value for the S parameter. And the QCD, the experimental QCD, what it gives you is something around here. And this is, as well in 5D, could be described as gauge-fobic Higgs. So what you see is that first thing, S is positive and over there 3 over 4 pi. So there is no way out for this one. And then, as I said, this guy couples only to the axle. So what will be the value of S in holographic QCD? In holographic technicolor, sorry, we are allowing ourselves to look at a wider region in the parameter space. And we are not only varying the value of the axial, but also the vector condensate. So what I'm plotting here is the value, for example, what's the curve for S equals 0 for dimension 2. And this region that is shaded here, and I don't have time to explain, but this is the region where Witten's positivity condition is violated. So, in conclusion, in the holographic technicolor, there is a region where the S is small, or even negative, but what it has to be for sure, has to be for sure is something that applies both to the axial and both to the vector. Because if you look at here, what the gauge phobics are doing is varying only the axial condensate here. So there is no way only for the gauge contribution to get to be small or even negative. So you really need something that applies to both to the vector and to the axial, which is okay, because even in QCD, we know the gluon condensate applies to the vector and to the axial. So just looking at this figure here, you may ask, okay, what is the value and sign of S in holographic technicolor? It looks like it can be whatever. But before looking at this, let's do something. Let's start by just building a sensible five-dimensional model that leads to S equals 0. And what I'm... Yes?
So your values of OB and OA are very large.
It is a question of units, if you look in QCD, it's already between 20 and 30. It's a question of what units. Yeah, but depends on the 2 and 4 that we... So we use as a reference holographic
How large are you comfortable making that?
Well, you see that, in fact, we use the same. We use that, the same minus 30 to 10, and the same for here. So this is rich on the one we are interested in. So you look, and you go more farther here or farther here, you're really going to non-NDA answers. So, okay. So let's start by building a five-dimensional model that leads to S equals 0. Let's see if it's possible. The first thing we can do is look at the things that are not going to work. The first thing that doesn't work is pure ideas, because this is this point here. ABS plus an axial condensate is just this line here. And following QCD factorization rules is not going to work because it's this line over here. So it has to be something.
So what do you mean exactly by QCD factorization?
Yeah. So I'm doing several assumptions. I'm saying, okay, I know in QCD the vector and the axial, two-point function, receive a correction that goes like Q to the 6, with the quark condensate here. And what people does is that in the Larchen limit, they know what's the coefficient here and the coefficient here. So they can tell you between, let's say, the OV and the OA, what is the relation.
Mm-hmm.
And this is QCD factorization. But there's no reason why it should be here. Right. So you say
you predict that in QCD, and you're just saying that, okay, well, this is not QCD, it's something else, and you're just going to fit it to so that it works, okay?
But it's not, I don't think, this computation of the QCD factorization is done by Schiemann and collaborators
mm-hmm.
a long time ago. It's very theoretical, and data doesn't seem to confirm for QCD this factorization. So it's nothing that you should take like a strong ground for QCD, I think.
Right, but I guess ultimately you would want to write down some QCD-like theory that actually predicted the numbers you need there.
But what I'm saying is that my QCD-like thing won't have all these guys, will also have this one domain Q4, one domain Q4 over here, and there is no, you know, I don't have to follow this relation. There is no such a thing. So, okay, so from this we know word doesn't work, and what is going to work is something that talks to the vector and to the axiom. So let's do something very simple, I hope. So let's add a guy that acts like the gluon condensate, if you want, or is like a dilaton in the extra dimension. It's a neutral guy that couples to gravity. And let's add the old guy that we had before, this guy that couples to the axial and breaks the electrobeak symmetry. So what we know is that if this guy couples to gravity, the fact that it's non-tachyonic, something I'm imposing, leaves me some relation or some sign for the modification in the metric that this guy does. So I know that couples to gravity, so couples equally to the vector and the axial. So it has to be that its contribution for the axial and the vector is equal. But since it's non-tachyonic, I know it has to have a negative sign here. Just a sign, a convention. I know also this guy that couples to the axial and makes electrobeak symmetry breaking, electrobeak symmetry, sorry, has a V square that is positive, of course. You don't want anything weird going on. So you know that the net effect of this guy over the axial is given some condensate in front that is positive. So of course, this system cannot be solved, but what you see is that, at least not analytically, what we see is that this phi applies to the axial and vector with a given sign. This x applies to the axial with the opposite sign. So in general, the situation you are going to have is that first that the vector is going to be negative, and second that the axial is probably going to be bigger than the vector. Okay? So let's look at this. I just up to now. I know that to solve to get a smallest parameter, I cannot do just the x guy. I know that in general, even in QCD, it's not going to be the case, that I will have a Bloom condensate or a dilaton. So I'm adding this guy there and looking at the region in parameter space. So what I find is that if you look, OV less than 0 is this region here, OA bigger than OV is this region here. So all this region is the one you expect from this model. And all this region is the one I want for phenomenological purposes. So in summary, this works. So you see, this stupid modeling is enough to give a negative or equal zero S parameter, and also follows Witten's positivity condition. And you may ask if this is a question of luck, or is really telling you that sensible modeling in 5D is going to lead, in general, to this kind of result. Well, so still we have the question we had before of, is there any prediction for this parameter in this kind of models, because I see a huge range of S over here. In QCD you will then ask this question because you have a computation, you have sort of a measurement for the L10 or the S parameter. So you just fix the value, and as in the hadronic, as in the table I was showing you for holographic QCD, then you infer other quantities. Here the situation is the same. We cannot predict the S parameter. What we can do is to look for correlations between the S parameter and quadratic, other quadratic quantities like the spectrum, cappings, and cis-a's. So for example, what you can look is along this, let's see, S equals zero line that I put here, how does the spectrum look like? Well, it does look like this. So for negative OA, what I get is that both the rho and A1 are degenerate. For the other region, what I see is that the axial gets lighter than the rho. And that's funny because people doing technicolor, using just some rules, were showing that probably the region where the S parameter is going to be small or negative is going to be this one. Either a degeneracy in the first KK modes, or where the axial gets lighter than the rho. Okay, so again, in technicolor, you couldn't proof it and you couldn't compute it, but you could infer. Okay, so
I'm a little bit confused.
Yes.
I mean, this is something that I thought might have been predicted just by the QCD period.
No, because...
Now, why is the electric week entering here?
Let's see. So you just look at the S parameter. The S parameter is, what is it? You can write it as a contribution of many resonances. Vector and axial resonance decay constants, some properties of these resonances. So you just look at the first resonance, the Rho and A1, you don't get these results. In fact, what people were saying is that probably in a technicolor model, the S has to receive loss of contribution from many resonances, not only the first one. So what we find is that it's true. In the five-dimensional model, if you just look at the S and if you compute the S and try to compare with just the lower line resonances, you don't get the right result. You need many of them in order to get the S parameter.
So is that saying that your pure QCD holographic technique then fails for the higher resonances?
No, what I'm saying is that my holographic technicolor model, as people in technicolor were saying anyway, doesn't have lowest meson dominance. The S parameters some rule is not saturated by the first resonance.
But I thought your pure QCD one did not allow you the OA, or you only kept the OB or something like that.
No, it's not true, because in holographic QCD, to describe data, you just need the OA. But in QCD, you have this gluon condensate that couples to both the vector and the axial.
I see. So you're expanding your QCD to include both OA and OB, and at the same time moving to the electro week. So you're changing sort of the overall.
Because it's
model.
Funny, in QCD,
okay.
you will expect that this gluon condensate has an effect.
Yeah.
But if you look in the numbers, it doesn't. So it's more like a question of luck.
Okay.
So let's just.
Or because there's a cancellation.
Or because there's a cancellation. It seems more like a cancellation. But.
May I go back to. But now you use NDA and 5D to argue that the leading terminology is bound by Q to the fourth term? Or is it OV?
Yeah, so when I am writing down.
So you go on
this.
Okay.
So this OA is already assuming D equals 2, so the 1 over Q4. There is something I didn't say.
But for QCD, it starts with 1 over Q to 6, so the NDA doesn't apply to QCD.
So I'm using NDA for the 1 over Q4. Why I'm doing this? In fact, from the Q6 and Q4 case, there is not such a big deal. It's more for the higher order that I really decrease a lot. So what I'm saying is, in order to work, better be D equals 2 or D equals 3, so Q4 or Q6, because if not, the coefficient is just ridiculous. And what I'm saying is that it's most likely to be Q4, and that's why I'm showing this case.
It's most likely, but it's not for QCD, for real QCD.
No, but also people, that's what we find from a five-dimensional model, that it's better to be in the Q4 than in the Q6. People in technicolor were saying that in fact, it's better for this quark condensate to work. So in fact, going from Q6 to Q4, if you want to solve many problems.
Yeah, I guess this is my same question, basically.
You did
something for QCD, and since you point out that would have been pure Q to the 6, but now you're just expanding. And
she's not doing QCD anymore, because QCD doesn't work for electric symmetry, right?
Right, but she's trying to do QCD at the same time, because she's predicting the Rho to A mass and things like that, which in principle should have been a QCD, pure QCD.
No, it's not the Rho and A1 of QCD. I'm talking about the Techni Rho and the Techni A1. Yes.
Okay, that I didn't...
Sorry, I didn't understand.
Okay, that resolves my question. Okay.
So monitor Q4 is what people used to call walking technical.
Yes, exactly. So it's not like what you get is not such a strange thing. Like many people doing technicolor must find this very trivial, but okay, it's a framework to work. So as I said, the S parameter cannot be predicted, but since it's a quadratic quantity, I can correlate with other quadratic quantities because they are not so sensible. The fact with the S parameter is that contains two contributions. So it's sensible to what happens to the axon and the vector at the same time. whereas the spectrum is not, so this you can get. And in general, the situation will be a 10-neuron on 10EA1 that are degenerate, or even the 10EA1 below the 10-neuron, which again was expected from QCD, from 10-neuron neurons. So let me conclude, unless you have more questions. So holography has been tested in QCD, and I don't know if I really emphasize the fact that you are using a stupid five-dimensional model where you put the minimum requirements in something that you wouldn't expect at all to work from just the ADS CFD, and you get an agreement that is between the 10 to 4%. So that by itself is, I find it quite impressive. The second thing is that for us, it's very important to follow the rules of the game. And the rules are better be in the large end limit, use NDA for condensates, or you are doing something goofy in the five-dimensional point of view. And also this NDA in for condensates in 5D predicts the correct behavior for the OPE in QCD. So, I mean, it's quite appealing. And look at quadratic quantities, because the rest are not going to be trustable in principle. But okay, quadratic quantities are maybe what you're going to work out in the LSE. And what you're going to end up is with a rich phenomenology, because this kind of models, since they don't have the constraints for the S parameter, this thing here before, this scale can be of the lowest scale allowed by Tevatron and Lev. So these resonances can be very low, these resonances are weakly coupled, and there is a trustable five-dimensional description of them. And these cross-checks between what people expected in Technicolor and what we get in 5D are really appealing. So in terms of phenomenology, these small kind of models are interesting. And just to give you, since people here were in his lesson on these kind of models, just tell you that holographic Technicolor includes this kind of gauge-phobic Higgs, that at the same time includes these composite Higgs models or the Higgs, just purely Higgsless models. And that's it.
So there is a Higgs as a composite, right?
It could be,
model.
Yes. So when I'm doing...
Or possibly...
In some regions of the
In some regions.
Space.
Yes.
In the regions of parameter space where it looks like a normal Higgs, is there a prediction for the Higgs mass or a range?
You know that if it's a normal Higgs, it's not NDA anymore. Let me explain you something. So when I was saying, okay, let's do NDA in 5D, what I get in NDA is that I expect some value for the web of the condensate,
mm-hmm.
and I expect for a given dimension, I can predict the value in between NDA. And, sorry, a simple Higgs, it will give you is d equals 1. And here, this NDA diverges, meaning that, of course, you have to tune the value of the Higgs, so there is no NDA value for us. So what I mean is that since in this figure here, I'm using NDA and the standard model Higgs is tuned, then I cannot plot this.
So, well, I guess I'm confused still. I mean, is there
can't
some
handle when the Higgs is elementary? Can only
right.
handle when it's some kind of composite.
Yes.
Okay, but if it's a composite, will it still appear as some kind of produced bound state?
Yeah. So where I'm
so
talking.
So what range of masses? I mean, you know, at low scales, I guess it appears elementary. So. I know that in the Higgsless models, of course, you can get very heavy Higgs. I mean, is there sort of a lower bound to the Higgs mass in this effective way of thinking or anything like that?
To be sincere, I haven't
zero.
Looked at it.
Zero, I see.
It has to be above zero.
Yeah.
Because
well,
you can
okay,
make
well
the couplings weak, right? So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the experimental bounds go
yeah,
away.
Go away. And is there anything, any analog of what used to be in Technicolor, the pseudo-Goldstone bosons? The
technipions?
Yeah, technipions.
Yeah, they will be these composite Higgs.
And I again, those can be sort of as light as you like, I guess. Is that right?
Yeah. So yes, I haven't looked at this sector. I have forgotten about the demi-range for a moment.
If you had a larger global symmetry, then you have
more
extra technique.
Yeah.
So.
Right, yeah. I mean,
yeah,
of course, it depends on the global symmetry.
Mm-hmm. So in this figure, I'm just doing the Higgsless. And what you will do is to rescale everything up and down depending on your tenipana.
So there's a paper out there by Rothstein and collaborators claiming to rule out string grid LHC by unitary analyticity constraints. And if I remember correctly, they have a graph that looks almost identical to this one, based upon unitarity and analyticity, if I'm not mistaken.
So
is there anything inherently 5D or ADS-CFT about the disallowed regions here, or is this just essentially a statement, same as they made about
Only thing regarding unitarity, regarding unitarity, it's these resonances are 600 GeV, it's better than if they are 2 or 3 GeV. So you want to unitarize the WW scattering, so they better below and appear before the TV. So that model is appealing for this reason as well. And the only constraint I find is this Witten positivity condition. I don't know what I'm at. I mean, I'm not doing string theory. So.
This paper has nothing to do with string theory. It rules out string theory by ruling out field theory.
I don't know what the paper
has
is.
Anybody else read this paper? Does this make any sense?
I don't think this, so they must be looking at some low energy constants, some particular ones.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this
right
one will play a role. Yeah, but I don't think this one will matter for.
Maybe it's this Boston boson scattering.
So that'll be there'll be 1, 2, 3, and some other.
Well, you must be saying they're thinking that there is a possibility to rule it out. Not that they've ruled it out yet, right? If somebody had ruled out field theory yet, you would have.
Well, I mean, that's a separate discussion. What I'm just asking with this is this the disallowed regions here, are they a generic statement about field theory, or is there inherently anything?
Well, this S is just an L10, it's one of these KPT constants, this P4, one of these ones. But I haven't read this paper, so I don't know what's going on. I just can tell you that from the 5D point of view, if I have low resonances, I know that unitarity is going to be fine. And I also know that just from the fact that you have a five-dimensional model and enjoys this higher dimensional gauge invariance, it's going to give me already but it's going to give me that at high energies, the Boston scattering is going to be fine. I don't have any Q dependence, and to say. So this comes from any five-dimensional model. I don't have to do anything about this.
When you have this several hundred GeV resonance, and you rules out strong constraint from full Fermion operator, one way is to avoid to have flat Fermion wave function, and that's
this
if you don't look at that, any other way to solve it? It's always, you have to always choose the friendly.
So let me just say that here, what I'm plotting is just the contribution to the S parameter by the gauge force. So I'm keeping all the fermions in the ultraviolet, and I'm not doing anything with them. So if I add these fermions on the back, then I can play with them as well. But I didn't want to do that. I wanted to be able to show you a model where that just the gauge contributions are fine.
Just say now the precision constraint is so good that I mean you really have to take into account this Fermion operator, yeah, synchronous SFT parameters. But just say if you include that, are you forced into this corner, you always need that wave function there for S parameter is fine too.
What Alice is telling me is that there is no prediction for this. So the only thing I can tell you is that if I measure the raw 10 neuron 10 EA1, I can see if it corresponds to this situation or not. But it has nothing, at least for me, to do with getting more and more precision in DS, because I know it could get whatever value.
So is there any kind of upper bound on the technirone, technia mass in this in order for it to all work?
Well, for the case of Higgsless, it has to be below the TEV. to unitize the.
Yeah,
like
to say if you have flat fermion, in fact, it's hard to produce a Ruan A1 on resonance. Right?
Yes. So I haven't looked at the flavor.
So when you're talking about these fermions, you're talking about the Techni fermions or
standard.
So repeat your statement again. Then, if you have flat,
if you have these new vectors at a few hundred GeV and coupled to the standard model fermion, you get these full fermion operators.
Yes.
Which is strong constrained by precision data.
Okay. So
one way is to have flat fermion wave function like John did, so that they don't couple to this rho and A. Then I think you avoid the full fermion operator, and then the S property is also fine.
But then you can't
produce. But then it's hard to produce the rho and A to measure their mass.
No, you need to build an LHC.
So this is a different stuff.
Can you write down explicitly for the Technicolor model, which corresponds to
Yeah, so you can work out spectrum coupling of these guys. Quadratic quantities, you can write down the quadratic dimension. Yes, you can. Whereas telling you that for the particular case of the S, I need to take into account several resonances. Because I mean there is a no cancellation between these two contributions. So if I want to compute any other thing, I'm fine. I just look at the coupling constant and I work out my dimension. But if I want to compute the S, I have to do it with several resonances. Because also, since it's large n, until I hit the cutoff, I have many resonances. So in this sense, it's also the phenomenology is richer because you have one static maybe at 600 GeV and many others just lying around. So it's going to be a more complicated arrangement, richer.
You mentioned the S parameter. Another big problem of Technicolor theory is that fermion mass is
yes.
at the top and all this. I mean,
when that situation, so I haven't worked out the fermion masses in this model, but the fact that you don't have this constraint with the S parameter is going to allow you to do more things with the fermions and maybe explain fermion mass hierarchy. But in principle, I don't see why not. It should be like random swimming, and you could do that.
That correlation won't all among low dimension, all correlation.
This,
yeah.
So yes, because when you look at this plot, and there is a relation between these two condenses, this means that you are fixing the geometry. And once you know the geometry, you can, in principle, compute everything. So, you know, at the quadratic level.
For five dimensions.
I don't see why it wouldn't work.
So suppose this were to be nature's choice, you know, some point on your S equals zero curve here, and you could make all the fermions work out. So there would be some scale above which you'd have to just do some ultraviolet completion or something like that.
This model is quite lucky in the sense that since it's large n, in terms of the scales, you have the standard model WG. Then you will have the first resonance, probably the 10A1, let's say 600 GeV. Then, in principle, you have this 4 pi f of 3 GeV.
Right.
And in between these two scales, there are a quantity of resonances that goes like square root of n. So you have a lot of resonances here.
Mm-hmm.
And the ultraviolet cutoff of this thing, where I should provide an ultraviolet completion, is very high. So it's of order, I think, 1,000 GeV, and it's very high. And if you move along the extra dimension, it gets higher and higher and higher. So for example, things involving fermions, it's not going to be a problem at all. So that's why I wanted the rule of the game that I want large n, because I know I can do that.